I'm obviously not Rick. I don't know if you noticed or not. They are coming back from Mississippi, taking Luke to college. He tapped me last weekend to go over to do Job 5 with you guys. I will confess, I have read more of Job and studied more of Job in the past 7 days than I have the last 33 years of my life. Okay? So we're going to go on this adventure together. We're going to see what we can learn. I do pray that God's going to speak through me and that the words that are coming out of my mouth will be His words and not just mine. Okay? So let's start off with a prayer. God, thank you for this day. God, thank you for your blessings. Thank you for getting us here safely. God, I pray that you'll speak through me. God, you'll let me be your mouthpiece. God, open up our hearts to what you have to say to us about Job and about just troubles in our lives. God, we love you. We thank you. In your name I pray. Amen. All right, so the past 3 or 4 weeks, we've been talking about Job and about his theology of trouble is what Rick's been calling it. So let's do a little overview. The first week in Job 1, we just kind of set the stage, talked about how Job was a man that had a lot of things. He must have been an important man. And then, you know, God and Satan get into this conversation, and God gives Satan the ability to go do anything he wants to Job's things, right? But he can't touch Job. And so he takes away all of his possessions, his cattle, all of his herds of everything, takes away his kids. Job still doesn't turn away from God. Then chapter 2, we start out where God and Satan get together again. Satan says, well, yeah, he didn't turn from you, but if you let me get him, then we might have a change of heart. But God says, you can get him, but you cannot kill him. So Satan goes and gives the man boils from head to toe, right? From the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. Job still doesn't turn from God. And his wife even says, just curse God and die. It'd be easier for you. There'd be less pain. Just curse God, die. Let's get this over with. And then in Job 3, he finally speaks up and he says that he wishes that he could curse the day he was born, which that's a natural reaction for any of us, right? We have troubles. We have hardships. We start, you know, we thinking about what we did or what we've done. We start wishing that it had never happened to us, right? Then last week, Eliphaz, one of the good friends, I say friends with quotes, speaks up after they've been there for a couple of days, and he talks, and that's about all he does. There's no good advice given. There's no good encouragement given. He just talks. And then we're going to pick up in chapter 5. So we're going to look at Job chapter 5, the first 6 verses. And it says, call if you will, but who will answer you? To which of the holy ones will you turn? Resentment kills a fool, and envy slays the simple. I myself have seen a fool taken root, but suddenly his house was cursed. His children are far away from safety, crushed in court without a defender. The hungry consume his harvest, taking it even from among thorns, and the thirsty pant after his wealth. For hardship does not spring from the soil, nor does trouble sprout from the ground. So what are your first thoughts when you hear Eliphaz, after he's been talking all of chapter 4, you know, he'll say he catches his breath. He starts out with, call if you will, but who will answer you? And this is what he starts with. What are your first thoughts? What a friend. Yeah. Say it again, Mr. Jerry. That was my thought last week, too. And in my reading of it, he starts out with a swing and miss, right? He's already had one in chapter 4, so he's got one strike against him, in my opinion. And here he comes with, call if you will, but who will answer you? To which of the holy ones will you turn? He does no more encouraging or anything else than he did in the first chapter. So in my book, he's got strike 2 on him. He's on the ropes, if you will. So let's go through this a little bit and kind of dive into some of the specifics here. He starts out in kind of the same tone, right? In chapter 4, he started out by asking God or asking Job, if someone ventures a word with you, will you be impatient? You know, he's kind of being tentative with his speech here. If somebody is brave enough to speak to you, will you be impatient with that person? Which is not a good way to start a conversation, right? It's kind of like when you're a kid and your mom or dad says, we need to talk. And the first thing you want to do is run the other way, right? Yeah, we still do. Eliphaz starts this out kind of the same way. If only, wrong one, call if you will, but who will answer you? You know, call out if you want to, Job, but who's going to answer you? And then he goes into, which of the holy ones will you turn? Who do you think Eliphaz is talking about when he says the holy ones? To which of the holy ones will you turn? Which are the angels? Okay. So remember, Eliphaz comes from a land where they are known for their wisdom. They're known for their knowledge. The studying that I did, when it says the holy ones, that was a common way of saying which one of God's people, which one of God's other believers, if you will, are you going to turn to? Who else can give you counsel if not the three of us, your three friends? So Eliphaz is basically just asking them, you know, who else can we talk to get you to see the light, right? And then he goes into, he starts right in with admonishing Job for wanting to curse the day of his birth. You know, like I said, it's a reaction that I've had many times. You know, things happen to me and I don't curse the day I was born, but I definitely don't say the nicest things when I start getting my troubles, right? I didn't ask, I meant to ask, I didn't. What kind of troubles have you had this week? Let me tell you about the week I've had, okay? Yeah, it's still going on right now. So last Sunday after the 11 o'clock service, Rick came to me, said, hey, can you lead the 9:30 service on Job 5? I said, absolutely sure, we'll do it. Tuesday night, you know, Dane's out of town too, right? So I am leading the Tuesday night life group that Dane usually leads. We co-lead now, and so I am in charge of that group for 2 weeks. Oh, that's fine. That's great. We get to life group Tuesday night at the Georgetown office, and as soon as we get the car parked, Noah starts throwing up all over the back of the car. I get him out. I take him over to the side. He's all over the grass. You know, he has a 24-hour bug. I was up with him till 3 o'clock in the morning with him just every hour, hour and a half, just, you know, sick, just sick, sick, sick. He stayed out of school Wednesday. I thought I had it, so I stayed out of work Wednesday. And we all went back to our lives on Thursday. Then part of our dishwasher, which is only a couple years old, the part that's, we have a two-part dishwasher, right? The bottom part does the bottom. There's a part that spins for the top rack. That part came off. Our dishwasher broke, okay? On top of that, the refrigerator had the freezer part. We have a double stack, right? The bottom's a freezer. The freezer was getting up to 15 or 20 degrees, which doesn't sound that bad, but it's usually at 0 degrees. The condensing fan motor has gone out in our refrigerator. Now, luckily, I am an HVAC tech, so it's basically what I work on every day, just in little smaller details, right? The screws are smaller, the refrigeration pipe smaller. I got that fixed. Got the dishwasher fixed. And then, let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, Gail came home Friday. And the doorbell at our house, our dog likes to, she's an escape artist, she likes to get out of our house. One day she got out and she was trying to get back in by getting to the doorknob, and she got the doorbell and now it's all cracked up. And when Gail got home, the doorbell was stuck. So it's just ringing over and over and over again, over and over and over. And Gail found a flathead screwdriver, she got it pried open, so it stopped ringing. So we had to go to Home Depot yesterday, buy a new doorbell. That was up until yesterday. The week's not over yet. This morning, about 5:30 in the morning, Gail herself got sick. So Gail is not here this morning because she's been sick all morning with the same thing basically that Noah had. And all of this to say, I've had a few troubles, right? I think we all have. If we're all being honest with ourselves, we all have had a few troubles this week. And I do believe that when we talked about last week in the 11 o'clock service, the shepherd and the lost sheep parable, you know, we talked about the leaving the one to go chase leaving the 99 to go chase the one, right? Well, I had this thought during the week that if you leave the herd of 99 to go get that one, then that herd is being left open, right? So that herd is there, and while there's a big group of sheep, it's easy for a wolf or a lion or whatever to come nip at the outside of the herd, right? So when the shepherds, Rick and Dane, are away, because Dane is 6 hours ahead of us, Rick is, I don't know how many hours behind. Well, he's only an hour behind us, but he's hundreds of miles away from us, right? There's Dusty here. Dusty's the man of the fort, and he's trying to go get the one. And I really do believe that Satan is doing everything he can to stop this from happening, this 9:30 service. And I hope that you guys will get something out of it this morning, because, man, I've been through something to get here, to be honest with you. So those are my troubles. So I, during the week, have had, you know, a couple of times where I just look at the sky and, God, why? God, why us? Why me? What are you doing? How are you working? So I can't blame Job for his, you know, cursing the day he was born speech. But, like I said, Eliphaz is admonishing Job for wanting to curse the day he was born. Then we look at verses 3 and 5. I myself have seen a fool taking root, but suddenly his house was cursed. His children are far from safety. Crushed in court without a defender, the hungry consume his harvest, taking it even from among thorns, and the thirsty pant after his wealth. It seems to me Eliphaz is basically telling Job all that has happened in Job's own life, that all of his possessions are lost, his children are lost, the physical pain he's going through, is all because he and his family are foolish and are living in sin. So Eliphaz tells this story to say, hey, you've done something wrong, obviously. God's punishing you because you have done something wrong. You're living in sin, so because of that, all your possessions are gone, your children are dead, you are now physically in all this pain. So Eliphaz is going to go into, why is this? He's going to try to go into, why is this happening to you? Then verse 6, Eliphaz jumps back into his half-truth accusations of Job. We talked about last week that a lot of what Eliphaz said was truth to a degree, but when you take the truth and you take one little bit away from it and make it not true, the whole thing becomes not true, right? So he's going to go back into his half-truth. He's basically telling Job that things, bad things don't just happen. Eliphaz and the way he is, the area he's from, believes that we deserve the things that happen to us, that God will punish us for the bad things that happen, for the bad things we do. When he said that hardship does not spring from the soil, nor does trouble sprout from the ground, that unlike a weed, if you go out in your yard and you see a weed, weeds just grow. You don't have to do anything to help a weed grow, right? So just like, unlike a weed, your trouble has to be sown, has to be planted, has to be cared for. Your trouble usually has to be cultivated. It's something that you tend to a lot of times, right? Let's go ahead and look at verses 8 through 16. And while we're getting there, or 7 through 16, sorry. In verse 7, it says, yet man is born to trouble as surely as sparks fly upward. Is that true? Is man born to trouble as surely as sparks fly upward? Yes. Man is born to trouble, right? We are born in sin. Because of the fall, because of Genesis 1, we are born into trouble. So we've looked at all of Eliphaz has said so far. Do you think listening to people like Eliphaz helps our troubles or causes more trouble for us? Okay?
Right.
Right. I agree with that. All right, so let's go to verse 8. But if I were you, this is Eliphaz speaking again, but if I were you, I would appeal to God. I would lay my cause before him. He performs wonders that cannot be fathomed, miracles that cannot be counted. He provides rain for the earth. He sends water on the countryside. The lowly he sets on high, and those who mourn are lifted to safety. He thwarts the plans of the crafty so that their hands achieve no success. He catches the wise in their craftiness, and the schemes of the wily are swept away. Go to the next one for me, John. Thank you. Darkness comes upon them in the daytime. At noon they grope as in the night. He saves the needy for the sword. He saves the needy from the sword, in their mouth. He saves them from the clutches of the powerful. So the poor have hope, and injustice shuts its mouth. So finally, Eliphaz, after a chapter and a half of nothing productive, nothing good being said, has finally spoken some good advice to Job. Okay? I looked at this, and I spoke with Rick over the phone one day last week, and I, after reading a couple of things online and after talking to Rick, I am calling this little section the gospel according to Eliphaz. Okay? And the reason I say this, the gospel according to Eliphaz, is that if you look at the things he says, we can directly correlate the things that Eliphaz is saying about God to things that Jesus did in his lifetime. Okay? So it took a chapter and a half, and I know that the Bible is put together by men, so he didn't stop at chapter 5, then chapter 5 and say, all right, this is chapter 6 now, and keep talking. But in our Bible, a chapter and a half of Eliphaz is just rambling, almost non-coherent accusations of Job. My question to you is, how often do we stumble around and over ourselves before giving the very basic and very good advice of turning to God? Why does it take us so long for us to get to that point? So how many times are you ever talking to someone and you just talk and talk and talk and you never get around to the point of, somebody's got troubles in their lives and you never get around to, hey, I know a good, great God that can help you with your troubles. Am I the only one that get that happens to? No. So why does it take us so long to hear somebody say, I've got troubles, and it takes us, with me, more than a chapter and a half, if you were to write it down, of conversations and dialogues before I just come out and say, I know a good, great God that you can lay your cause before. Why does it take us so long? Yeah. We're human, so we kind of start winging it. Yeah. I think because we are human, we sometimes don't want to initially get the God part involved. You've got troubles. You know, I've got them too. I can tell you from my experience that your troubles are going to be okay because God's a good God. But if you're going through troubles, that's not always the best advice, is it? That's not the best thing to hear sometimes, is that, oh, well, you've had troubles. Well, I'm going through them right now. So how can, what do you have that can help me right now? Is what I think sometimes. Okay. Right. I'll go with that. See, I think one of my problems is if I can't get it to work, if I can't get it fixed up, I might call you to see if you can help me get it fixed. And if you can't, then we'll go call Dane or Dusty or Rick. And then if they can't get it, we'll go look online to see if somebody else has a good idea. And, you know, sometimes it just takes us way too long. Most of the time, it takes us way too long to get around to actually going to the one who knew the problem in the first place, who knew the problem before we even knew anything about it. You know? Yeah? I actually did. I'm not trying to, like, go against what... But I know myself. I know how clumsy I am. So, yes, I said not a little prayer. I said a long prayer the whole time. Because... let's look through some of these things real quick. Like I said, I'm calling this the gospel according to Eliphaz. So what are some signs and wonders and miracles that God has done for you in your life? Because in verse 9, he says that God performs wonders that cannot be fathomed, miracles that cannot be counted. What has God done in your life? That's a pretty good miracle to me. Right? Okay. There you go.
I was 2.5, my clothes caught on fire, and my right leg was burnt, 3rd-degree burns from I never supposed to be able to walk. Operations from grafting skin, they were happy. And the doctor told my mother and father, my hand was
alive. There you go. Praise God. All right, verse 11. The lowly are he sets on high, and those who mourn are lifted to safety. What are some examples of the lowly being lifted, both in the Bible and in our lives? I'll give you my low hanging fruit answer: the shepherds. The shepherds at the birth announcement of Christ. Right? God could have chosen to go to anybody, but he went to the shepherds first. And now, you know, every Christmas, no matter where you look, the shepherds are put on this pedestal. They're part of the big story. Shepherds were the lowliest low of all the people in that time. So that was one example of God lifting up the lowly. Do you have any others? Right. And not only ordinary, some of them were kind of the scoundrels too. Wasn't Matthew a tax collector? You know, nobody wanted to be seen with a tax collector, and Jesus hung out with one every day. Let's look at 12 and 13. He thwarts the plans of the crafty so that their hands achieve no success. He catches the wise in their craftiness, and the schemes of the wily are swept away. Where have we seen plans of the crafty being thwarted? In the story? Yeah?
The religious leaders of the Jews, they always try and trap him.
Yeah, you did. Except for that last time. And that's what my the teacher's guide answer I have. The plot to kill Jesus succeeded. They finally did get him. But without that plot to kill Jesus, we wouldn't be here right now. If he didn't die, he wouldn't have been in the tomb to rise again for our sins. So the plan succeeded, but the scheme was swept away. The scheme to get rid of Jesus and to get rid of the Christians was swept away when he rose again and was seen by, you know, hundreds of people afterward. Verses 14 and 16 through 16, darkness comes upon them in the daytime. At noon, they grope as in the night. He saves the needy from the sword in their mouth. He saves them from the clutches of the powerful. So the poor have hope and injustice shuts its mouth. I saw the darkness comes upon them in the daytime. My first thought was the crucifixion when, you know, it was as dark as night in the middle of the day and nobody knew what was going on. And then the poor have hope and injustice shuts its mouth. I mean, Jesus did more for the poor than I think anybody ever has. You know, he lifted them up. He ate with sinners. He dined with sinners. He invited them into his inner circle, if you will. He wouldn't let the disciples drive the children away. Let the children come unto me. And if you ask my son, children are all poor. They never have any money. So although all these things are very true about God, like I said earlier, this might not have been the best time to to talk about them, because it seems like Eliphaz is saying, God can do all things, but trouble still came on you, so what are you doing wrong? So let's go on with verses 17 through 27. Blessed is the one whom God corrects, so do not despise the discipline of the Almighty. For he wounds, but he also binds up. He injures, but his hands also heal. From six calamities he will rescue you, and seven no harm will touch you. In famine he will deliver you from death, and in battle from the stroke of the sword. You will be protected from the lash of the tongue, and need not fear when destruction comes. You will laugh at destruction and famine. You need not fear the wild animals, for you will have a covenant with the stones of the field, and the wild animals will be at peace with you. You will know that your tent is secure. You will take stock of your property and find nothing missing. You will know that your children will be many, and your descendants like the grass of the earth. You will come to the grave in full vigor, like sheaves gathered in season. And then he finishes up by saying, we have examined this, and it is true. So hear it and apply it to yourself. So once again, all these things that he just said about God are, they're true for those that trust in God. The issue is that Eliphaz fully believes that God corrects his sinful children. Therefore, Job must be a sinful child of God. He starts out by saying, blessed is the one whom God corrects. That's true. If you're being corrected by God, you know, God is at least looking at you with favor. The problem is, Job wasn't doing anything wrong. Let me rephrase that. Job didn't do anything in God's eyes to deserve this punishment. I'm not saying Job was perfect and sinless. It's like Russell said earlier, like we said a few weeks ago, Job was considered a perfect man because when he sinned, he dealt with it immediately, right? When he had a sin, he took care of it so that God didn't need to punish him for it. So regardless of the sins that Job might have had, these afflictions that came were not from God. They were from who? Satan. I'm not going to take credit for this. I read this online. So I'm going to go ahead and tell you that I have to give someone else credit for this one. But we do not know the behind-the-scenes battles that are happening in the heavenlies. Okay? One of my favorite Bible passages ever is Ephesians. My favorite, I can't remember what chapter it is. The armor of God in Ephesians. I think it's 6. We wrestle not against principalities, against powers and rulers of the darkness. Put on the full armor of God. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You know, there are conversations taking place between angels and between evil beings and between God and between Satan that we never are privy of ever. And it's the case here. The first two chapters are all about God and Satan having this conversation that Job never learns about. Job doesn't know why these are happening to him. His friends don't know why it's happening to him. His friends assume he did something wrong because that's what happened back then. Is if you had something happen to you, you did something wrong. But in this case, it was not true. So I'm not saying this is always the case, but it is reasonable to believe that some of the bad things that happen in our lives happen because our faith is being tested by the evil one. Just like in Job, Satan said, if you let me have him, I can make him turn from you. And God said, do your best. And Satan did. Took away his children, took away all his possessions, gave him painful boils from top to bottom. And Job came close, it seems, with his, curse the day I was born. But he never turned from God. He didn't take that extra step and, you know, and denounce God. That's not a word like, doesn't seem right. He didn't curse God. Curse the day he was born, but not, he didn't actually curse God. So was Eliphaz correct in his assessment that God will protect his children? Half truth, why? If you look through the Bible, God does allow things to happen to his people. But usually when things happen to God's people, he pulls them out on the other side. Right? You know, 40 years in the desert, God gets them through it. God works in his own time. I think that's something that is kind of missing from whatever Eliphaz is saying. You know, he says from six calamities he will rescue you and seven no harm will touch you. It's almost like he's trying to put a timeline on the number of things that can happen. God doesn't work with timelines like that. I know from personal experience, I've tried to give God timelines many times and God laughs at that and gives me his own timeline that I'm still trying to figure out. But God will protect his children, but in his own time. Sometimes in protecting, like you said, in protecting his children, he lets things happen to his children. You know, the wildfires in California are going on right now. There's a process in nature that allows wildfires not that bad, but allows wildfires to happen. It makes the tree stronger. If you look through the, if you cut a tree down and you look at the rings on it, the people that study trees can look and see where a wildfire happened. It strengthens the trees. It gives them the ability to withstand it the next time. It's kind of the same with God. God will let things happen to you so that it strengthens you for the next time. Maybe this little bitty thing happens so that you can be ready for the next big thing. So finally in verse 27, Job is, Eliphaz is finishing up, and he says, "We have examined this, and it is true. So hear it and apply to yourself." Eliphaz finally brings in his two friends and whatever other counselors might have been gathered since the whole thing began. Because I'm sure in that area, this might have been a little show, right? You know, Job is losing his children. He's losing his possessions, his cattle. He's got boils on from head to toe. I'm sure people in the area knew about this, and they're probably gathering around to see what's going to happen. And of course, Eliphaz had his two friends with him that they sat silently for a few days before Eliphaz went into his diatribe. We haven't heard from the two friends yet, but they're still there. And Eliphaz claims that the things that he has said for the last two chapters are absolutely true. What's the issue with that statement? It's not so. We can say very matter-of-factly that Job is not being punished for committing sins. Like I said a few minutes ago, Job is part of a conversation and part of a scenario that God and Satan are having between themselves. There's something going on in the heavenlies, in the unseen, that is causing this to Job. Job is being tested, if you will. His faith is being tested to see what's going to happen. You know, it's kind of a thing I've heard my whole life. I grew up in a very Southern Baptist church, and something I hear all the time is, I said the extra little sentence and I lost what I was about to say. All things happen for the glory of God. Something you've probably heard, right? All things happen for the glory of God. And I believe that this thing with Job is happening so that God can get the glory for it. The things that happen in your life, the things, my troublesome week, all the things I told you about, all those things are happening so that God can get glory. Part of the week I didn't tell you about is Friday at work. Tuesday at life group, I told my life group that I don't get the opportunities at work to share Jesus with people because I'm an HVAC tech. If I come into your house, you know, I make, you know, hey, it's hot in your house. Imagine how hot hell's going to be kind of thing. You know, like, I don't feel comfortable doing that kind of thing. But my, yeah. So my first call on Friday was a motor that had to be changed two different times because I didn't put it in quite right, and I was aggravated Friday morning. Then the next call was a pastor that we've worked at his house before. He's a pastor out in Midway. And he and I had this conversation about God for probably 15, 20 minutes while I was waiting on something to happen with his unit. I took a lunch. Then after my lunch break, my next call was in Southbridge. And the call in Southbridge was a man that lived in New York City for a while, and he's part of the 100-man march or something to that effect, where he's part of a mentoring program to mentor specifically little boys. And we were just talking about, in my background, you know, I was an education major at Georgia Southern, and he said he wishes that it would have stuck because men teachers are needed and all this sorts of thing. And then he just kind of, as a side note, says, "I am a man of faith." And when he said that, my ear perked up, and I thought, wow, God, two in a row, right? You know, I've complained that I never get to talk about God. And then he said he's a man of faith, so we talked about God and church and Jesus and all these kind of things. And it wasn't any kind of serious, like, you know, serious conversation, but we did talk about God. I left that laughing, like God's got a sense of humor. I complained on Tuesday about not being able to witness or talk about God, and then two in a row. And then my last call Friday I texted Dane to see if he was available to talk for a minute, because my good day, I was riding high, went right in the toilet. I went right from a mountaintop into a valley within like a couple of hours. And then I didn't try to do plumbing work. No, I tried to install a part that didn't want to install, is what happened. But then I've always said that I'm not a very good prayer, right? I'm not good at praying without ceasing. I have, you know, I think I have ADD sometimes, where if I'm riding down the road praying, there's a squirrel. You know, squirrel turns into a movie turns into a song turns into this, and then I forgot what I was talking about. I left the call, which is right where, you know, where Quaco Road turns into Pooler Parkway. I was going from Pooler Parkway back to 17 to go back to the house. I live in Richmond Hill. And I started praying as soon as I got on Quaco Road. And I was praying out loud. I'm like, man, I'm not going to let this happen. I'm not going to let this define my day. And I started praying. I didn't stop praying until I got to 144 on 17. And I told Dane that. He actually called me Friday because I was in a place. Dane said, I said that. And he goes, wow, that's a long ride. I said, yeah, Dane, I know. I prayed the whole time. It was crazy. And it was, I started out with just simple God, you know, God, bind Satan, bind the evil one. Don't let him be near my family. Don't let him be near my house. You know, I prayed for Dane, Dusty, and Rick and their families. I prayed for Luke and Josh going to college. I prayed for things I haven't thought about in years, just praying to God and didn't stop. And that turned my day around. God redeemed that. You know, he redeemed my day. And my troublesome week, it didn't end. It had a good spot in it. So Eliphaz says he's got two friends. They say it's true. It was not true. Job is not being punished for committing sins. Let's do pretend for a minute. Let's play a little game. Let's pretend that this was all completely true, everything he said. Let's pretend Job was being punished for sins. How do you think Job would feel at his friend bringing these accusations to him at this time? You feel bad? Why would he feel bad, Miss Audrey? Yeah. Isn't that what you said? I thought I heard you say you'd feel bad. I'm sorry. You're the pastor's wife. You have to answer anyway. This isn't very uplifting advice to Job. If you've ever been going through something in your life and somebody comes to you and they start telling you all these things, you just put yourself in that situation. You're going through something that you never thought you would, and somebody comes to you and says, well, that's because you did something wrong. Yeah. That friend becomes a non-friend pretty quick. Yes, sir, Mr. Carroll. Okay. Why do you say that? He reminds me of Job's wife. A lot of admonishing him, and then basically just, you might as well die. You might as well curse God and die. That's not of God. Yeah. I kind of gathered that too. There's a lot of, did he really say that? And what Satan does. Like he told Adam, oh, like he told Eve in the garden. Did God really say that you would die? I think, because Satan knows as much about God as anybody else does, right? He kind of has to. If you're gonna go to battle with somebody, you're gonna go to war, you're gonna find out as much about the other party that you're warring against as you can. Satan knows as much as he can about God, and he knows the things that we know about God, and he's gonna take those things that we know, and he's gonna tell us those things, but he's gonna do like you said and take just a little bit and turn it just a little bit to make that true statement just a little bit false, and it makes it a whole false statement. I think that's one of his ways to get us. There's a song on the radio, Fear He Is a Liar. It only takes one little bitty lie to make the whole thing a lie. And then when you're found out to be a liar, it brings in how much of what else have you said was a lie. You know, it only takes one little bit of dishonesty to take your whole witness or your whole anything and just demolish it, you know. Does anybody else have any final thoughts before we close out? Yes, ma'am. I agree with that. He does. It is interesting. He says, I saw this happen to somebody else, instead of giving him a personal example. I saw this happen to somebody, you know, foolish man took root or whatever. It's really easy for you to claim what you're saying is true. You know, why would you say it otherwise? You know, same bat time, same bat channel next week. Rick hopefully will be back. We'll get to hear in Job 6, Job's reply. Thank you guys for allowing me to come and bring God's word to you. I will pray that Elmer's glue, pray that whatever is of God sticks and whatever isn't falls away. So I'm going to close this out in prayer. All right. God, thank you for your word. Thank you for Job. God, thank you for giving us an example of faith through troubles. God, again, I pray for Dane in England that he comes back safely. I pray for Rick and Regina in Mississippi as they come back safely. God, also pray for Dusty while he's here holding the fort down. God, just thank you for speaking to us. And God, like I said, anything that's of you, I pray that it sticks. And anything that's not, God, let it fall to the floor. We love you. And it's in Jesus' name that I pray. Amen.